Welcome, welcome, welcome on board the Random Ship for this, our 60th voyage. I am the captain on this weekly journey, Holt, and with me as always is my first mate and my brother, Alan.
Thanks for tuning in.
So for those of you who don't know, what we do here is we take 25 to 30 minutes every single week, and we wander the waters of the weird. Yes, the oceans of the obscure, the rivers of the random.
And if you make it to the end of the episode, you'll be rewarded with your weekly ship fact.
So you told me you have a story this week, Alan.
Well, not so much a story. I had an event that's happened since I last spoke to you that I thought you might be interested in talking about, or I'm sure it would pique your interest.
Okay. I'm titillated.
For the first time in my life, I went on a blind date.
Oh, exciting. Was it one of those restaurants where they make you eat in the dark? Or was it just you didn't know the person?
I just didn't know them. Also, she could see.
Oh, that's handy.
Yeah, I was also confused when I was first.
You were blindfolded, though. You were not allowed to see.
She sounded very manly, but
she kept threatening me.
But yeah, I had one of my people I know hook me up with one of his
other people he knows,
and we went and got coffee, and it went apparently not as well as I thought it did.
What? Oh no! So we're not having wedding bells, is what
Nope, unfortunately not. But as this podcast's primary purpose is to find me a wife,
yes.
I figured it was worth rehashing that I am still single.
Or at least a lover of some kind. So you thought it went okay, and she said, no, sir.
I thought it was okay enough to go out again. Like, okay, I didn't think it was like the best hour and a half of my life.
No, that's clearly three back-to-back podcasts.
Yes, of course. But I thought it was good enough for a second date, so I sent her a text and was like, hey, I had a good time. I'd be interested in going out again. And she responded, hey, I enjoyed meeting you. I would not.
Hey, guy, at least she's very, very to the point.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not being led on. I don't know why she didn't just say something at the time. Like, I could have saved an hour and a half on my weekend. But
yeah, you could have been like, hey, this, I'm not feeling this. Okay.
Yeah, especially if it was just, like, my physical appearance, because I'd understand, and, like, you can just know that right away.
I had a buddy who tried online dating. He was, for some reason, he was living in, like, California at the time, like, San Francisco area.
Weird.
And he online dated some girls, like, 6-7 years ago, and they agreed to meet in San Francisco. So he, for the
weekend.
Was it
a man?
No, it didn't turn out to be a man. It turned out to be the lady that was, he was texting back and forth with. But let's just say they went on a hike, and he was supposed to be, he had like rent an Airbnb for the weekend so they could go out 2, 3, 4 times, blah, blah. And at the end of the hike, she basically was like, yeah, I'm not feeling this. You don't look as nice as you did in your picture. And it was like,
oof.
He's like, is it my, like, are you not? She's like, no, I like you. And the conversation is just as good as I thought it would be. But she literally said, I'm just not attracted to you.
I mean, I guess that's probably worse than what I had.
But yeah, all she said was, I don't want us to have another coffee with you. Which is good, because if you took her to Starbucks, that's like $7 saved
yes.
on your part.
Yes.
This week, Alan, we look back on January 19th. We start in 1809.
I hear it was a good year.
Edgar Allan Poe, American short story writer, poet, and critic, is born.
Was he just a general critic in, like, of everything, or?
I guess. Maybe every, he just walked down the street criticizing things. Yeah.
Nice horse and buggy.
Interesting Edgar Allan Poe fact, he was born around Baltimore, and the football team is called the Baltimore Ravens after his most famous poem, The Ravens.
Oh, that's what I was going to say, Ravens.
Yeah. Now, I do have two of his poems for you.
Wait, is that is Edgar Allan Poe also the heartbeat guy?
Oh, A Telltale Heart?
Yeah.
I don't know, let me see. Luckily, everyone's favorite segment, Holt Live Googles.
It's my favorite.
It is.
No, oh, I know English things.
Well, now we're going to do everyone's real favorite segment, Holt reads poetry to Alan, and Alan decides whether it's a good poem. So first up, Alan, we have A Dream Within a Dream by Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh.
Take this kiss upon your brow, and in parting from you now, thus much let me avow. You are not wrong who deem that my days have been a dream. Yet if hope has flown away in a night or in a day, in a vision or in none, is it therefore the less gone? All that we see or seem is but a dream within a dream. I stand amid the roar of a surf-tormented shore, and I hold within my hand grains of the golden sand. How few, yet how they creep through my fingers to the deep, while I weep, while I weep. Oh God, I cannot grasp them with a tighter clasp. Oh God, can I not save one from the pitiless wave? Is all that we see or seem but a dream within a dream?
Wow. And I'm not saying this just because he has my name. I think that might have been the best poem so far. It had the most rhymes, even if they were kind of stretch.
You know what's hilarious? I didn't read this before. I just looked up shorter Edgar Allan Poe poems. It sounds like Dr. Seuss.
I was going to say it almost sounds like hearing you do that, read that, made me say, Holt should do slam poetry.
Next up, Alan, in our final poem of the day.
Wait, I have to rate it.
Oh. Is it a good poem or nah?
I will give it a 7 out of 10 because there was some suspicious rhymes in there.
Next is Alone, also by Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh.
From childhood's hour I have not been. As others were, I have not seen. As others saw, I could not bring my passions from a common spring. From the same source I have not taken my sorrow I could not awaken my heart to joy at the same tone. And then I loved alone. Then in my childhood, in the dawn of a most stormy life was drawn from every depth of good and ill, the mystery which binds me still. From the torrent o'er the fountain, from the red cliff of the mountain, from the sun that round me rolled in its autumn tint of gold, from the lightning in the sky as it passed me flying by, from the thunder by the storm and the cloud that took the form when the rest of heaven was blue, of a demon in my view.
Well, that one, hands down, is the best poem we've done so far.
So what would you rate it?
I will give that one a 9, because I don't think it was perfect. But it was very good and had nice flow to it, but I guess that was partially you.
Now we jump ahead 128 years to 1937. Howard Hughes sets a new air record by flying from Los Angeles to New York City in 7 hours, 28 minutes, and 25 seconds.
Ooh.
I just thought this would give us an opportunity to learn a little bit about Howard Hughes. Do you know who Howard Hughes is?
I'm guessing a pilot?
He is a businessman. He basically inherited $1 million from his dad and turned it into $2 billion, which nowadays would be $11 billion. And he was played by Leonardo DiCaprio in the movie The Aviator. Hmm. He owned a movie studio, casinos, and he got very interested in aviation. In a twist that is nice for random ship, his company built the Hercules H-4 airplane, which was nicknamed the Spruce Goose because it was made entirely out of wood because of wartime rationing. And it was the largest flying boat ever built.
It had
the largest wingspan of any aircraft that had ever flown until the Scaled Composites Strata launch first flew on April 13, 2019.
Wow, that was very recently.
And it's still in good condition and on display at the Evergreen Aviation and Space Museum in McMinnville, Oregon.
Wow. Now, the question is, if this plane.
Yeah, this would fit the theory from last week. Now we jump forward 16 years to 1953, and Lucy gives birth on I Love Lucy.
I didn't even know Lucy was pregnant.
Do you know that that was one of the most watched television shows up to that point? 72% of all television sets in the United States were watching live.
Wow.
That was 44 million television sets.
That is a lot. I've never seen the single episode of that show.
Isn't that the show with like the chocolate?
I have no idea.
I know the 70s show. made fun of it a lot. So that's where I know it, because like Wilmer Valderrama played like Desi Arnaz a bunch of stuff.
Okay, those are just names. I don't know what any of what you just said meant.
Now, Alan, we jump ahead 24 years to 1977 when President Gerald Ford...
I believe that's pronounced Gerald.
Gerald? pardons Iva Toguri D'Aquino, a.k.a. Tokyo Rose.
Ooh, I want an a.k.a. That's cool.
So this seemed like a very little thing at first, but this turned into the largest deep dive I have ever done on Random Ship.
So tell me about the Tokyo Rose.
It's crazy. And it has, it like relates. There's so many things that are similar to what's happening now. Okay, I'll just get into it. So in 1941, Tokyo Rose, Iva, she was born in Los Angeles, born and raised in LA, but she's of Japanese descent.
Makes
so
sense.
One of her relatives was sick in Japan, so she went back to Japan to take care of them. Now, back in the day...
Nice of her.
Yeah. Back in the day, you didn't travel across the ocean for like a week. You know, you were there for like 6 months kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So while she was there, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor.
Oh, problematic.
Yes. And even though she was born and raised in LA, she didn't have a passport because you didn't always need one back then. Like to get into Japan, all she needed was like a piece of paper that said she was allowed to visit. But okay. You needed a passport to get back. So she, when it was time for her to come back, she asked the U.S. Embassy to give her a passport, and they rejected her basically because she was Japanese. And they didn't want to do anything nice to Japanese people at that time.
Yeah.
Even though she was American. Like mm-hmm. she had an American citizenship. So she ended up being stuck in Japan. And then basically the Japanese government came up to her and said, you're not Japanese, really. To get your war ration, i.e. to be able to get food and stuff to be able to live during mm-hmm. the war, you need to denounce your citizenship and the United States altogether, which she refused to do. She refused to give up her citizenship.
She's in a pickle.
As a result, she became a prisoner of war. And what the Japanese made the prisoners of wars do, the English-speaking ones, they had to work at this propaganda radio station.
Okay.
And spread Japanese propaganda to try to, like, intimidate or whatever, the GIs who were over there. Because that was, like, the only radio station they could get or whatever, right?
All right.
That's where she got her name, Tokyo Rose.
Why?
That was just the name that GIs gave... female English-speaking radio personalities.
Oh.
Yeah. But it kind of... She became known as it. Then, at the end of the war, she tried to come back. But once again, they were still saying, like, nope, Japanese people, we don't want them, blah, blah, right? Even though, once again, she's from LA.
Yes, she's American.
Yes. It became kind of like a big thing where it's like, should we let her back in? And the media got involved. To the point where a writer at Cosmo magazine offered her $2,000, which at the time was a year's wages, to
wow.
be in an interview because she couldn't work in Japan because she wouldn't give up her citizenship.
Yeah.
And she couldn't come back to the States, so she needed the money. And at the interview, it was basically all just a setup. And he interviewed her, refused to give her the money. At the end of the interview, he called the military police. And they had been looking for her, essentially, to charge her with treason.
Oh, not a nice story.
Yeah, so they charged her with being a traitor. And she spent a year in military prison before they let her go because she refused on her broadcast to ever say anything anti-American. And so because she did that, they couldn't find any evidence of treason. So after a year and them going through all her broadcasts, they had to let her go. But they still wouldn't let her back into the States. So 3 years later, basically what happened was all this came back to the States. And this basically super conspiracy theory popular radio host at the time did this big anti-Tokyo Rose campaign. His name was Walter Winchell.
Oh, that guy sounds like he's the worst.
He spearheaded a public outcry saying we have to arrest her and she has to go to jail for treason. Like, to the point where there were propaganda movies made about her, where she was, like, an evil villain and, like, a temptress and stuff.
And to be clear, she's done nothing up until this
point. She's done nothing but be Japanese. And not even be Japanese. Have Japanese parents. Like, that's all she's done. And so then she got arrested because at the time Japan was under U.S. occupation. And so she got arrested in Japan and she served 6 years out of a 10-year sentence for treason before they relooked at her case and said, actually, she didn't do anything wrong. But there was so much media pressure to convict her that they just convicted her. And then it took 30 years for her to get pardoned, which means if you're a felon, you're not technically a citizen. So she lost her American citizen for being convicted of treason. She lost her citizenship for being convicted of treason and then wasn't a citizen for 30 more years.
That is so bizarre and ridiculous.
I know, right? And a little bit of backstory on that Walter Winchell guy. He was apparently like a super big deal back in the 40s. He was like the most popular. They say he was the first person to basically make news entertaining before it was very like, this is the news, enjoy the news. But as he got bigger and as he got more popular, he started throwing people under the bus left, right, and center. And so by the end, people hated him.
Understandable.
Like his friends all hated him, but the public still really, really liked him. And on April 4th, 1954, tell me if this sounds like it could have happened today. Winchell helped stoke the public fear of the polio vaccine. On his radio show, Winchell said, "Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea. Attention, everyone. In a few moments, I will report on a new polio vaccine claimed to be a polio cure, but it may be a killer." Then he went on to claim that the public health services basically found that the polio vaccines were contaminated and they would come clean within the next 10 days. Well, surprise, they didn't, and it was a giant conspiracy theory, and it's another thing of some guy with a mic telling lies. I read that and I was like, that's today! That's today! I don't know who's lying, but somebody's lying!
People have their weird made-up opinions, I guess.
Interesting, right?
That was a ride for sure.
Well, and I'll end it on a sad note. When she was in Japan, she met the
love of... The whole thing was a sad note.
She met the love of her life.
Was he Japanese?
No. I don't want to guess, but he was... I want to say South American or something, but maybe I'm wrong. He could never get official papers to come to the States even after she did.
Oh.
And so in 1980, she had to pick between being married to him or her country. And it says she mournfully chose to divorce him.
Wow.
So once again, she chose the country, and the country kept screwing her.
Yeah, she loves America more than anyone.
Oh my goodness. This is what, like, our great-grandkids are going to be saying about, hopefully not us, but, like, people. They loved Canada more than anyone. Just because they didn't love hockey, they got tied up, and they got hockey pucks slapped at them. So last week, Alan, I talked about that it was minus 40 degrees where I live.
Yes.
And more minus 50 some days. Well, this week it's 5 degrees. So it's actually quite nice here.
I was going to say, I'm sitting at a balmy 11. So,
but when I did the rundown for this week's episode, I was still in freezing cold mode. And I said, you know where I want to be? I want to be sipping a pina colada on a beach. So this week's random rank is our top favorite beaches. Pretty straightforward. What is your third favorite beach, Alan?
Well, I will be clear here in that, like, two of my three are beaches that I don't know if I've actually been to, but they're in the area of beaches that I've been to, and I just don't know if they're the correct names. You know what I mean?
One of mine is exactly the same, and I'm going to need to ask you if we've been to that or if my memory is wrong. So,
okay.
But it's a very pretty beach if you look it up.
Okay. So my number three ranked beach is West Bay Beach in Grand Cayman in the Cayman Islands. I don't know if you remember this, but we went on a cruise.
I remember going to the Cayman Islands. I don't remember a beach, though. I remember driving around in a Jeep. That's what I remember doing.
Well, I remember it was, at the time, what I thought was the most beautiful beach in the world. It was, they had a nice, like, really long boardwalk for some, or not boardwalk, but like a pier almost.
Yeah.
So you could like walk quite a ways out into the water. But the sand was like, it was all white sand, all like almost green water, but like not like gross green water, like that
Like aqua, turquoise.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And up until, I mean, my number one ranked beach is nicer, obviously. But up until I went to the number one ranked beach, this was the most beautiful beach I'd ever been to. And like, whenever I think of a beach, I still actually think of this one before the other one.
Before I say what I'm going to say, I just have to ask, because I don't want to spoil your number one. Is your number one a beach that we went to on my wedding cruise?
No. You've never been to my number one.
Oh, okay. Then I think, because I will say, I did consider the beach we went to in St. Thomas, which to me was the most beautiful beach we've ever been to, except that lady who ran the cantina and yelled at me for sitting when I literally bought a beer from her and then sat at the table at her cantina. She yelled at me and said they were for paying customers only. I just paid for this. I just paid for this beer. She ruined the beauty of the beach.
Beauty and the Beach. Love that movie.
My number three, Alan, is, I wouldn't say it's the most beautiful beach, but it does tie back to my honeymoon. My wife and I did a road trip from Miami all the way up to Charleston and down to Atlanta.
Fun.
And we stopped at this little beach town called Flagler Beach. Mm. It was too cold to go swimming in the ocean. They had a fishing pier. It didn't even have anything on the pier, but I just have lovely memories of my time in Flagler Beach, February, walking along the beach, the delicious shrimp tacos that they had there. They have a beautiful fish place right on the ocean where it's like, yeah, here's literally, this was swimming two hours ago. What is your number two beach, Alan?
My number two beach is one that I think we both knew had to be included on these lists.
It would have been my number one. I didn't know you were going to put it so low.
Probably, I could get some backlash for putting this at number two. But it is Ocean Park in Maine. A large portion of our extended family for years and years, every summer.
We go there for family reunions.
We'd go for family reunions.
There's no jellyfish. There's shuffleboard. There's lots of old people.
So many old people. It's a dry town, which is always interesting.
Yeah, but it's cool because the restaurants just let you bring your own alcohol, so you save money.
Well, you have to buy your own alcohol, but
yeah, but it's the States, and they basically give alcohol away. It's so cheap down there.
That's true. But yeah, I just have many fond memories there with the family, running in and out of the water.
You buried me in sand and almost killed me once.
Hilarious. Man, I've almost killed you quite a few times. Well, that's not true. We've just been together.
When
you've almost died multiple times.
That is would have been my number one. It has the most fond memories. I'm far more sentimental than you, I think.
You are. So.
But my number two is in British Columbia. It's on the Pacific Ocean. It's on Vancouver Island. It's Qualcomm Beach. Once again, it's not the most pretty beach. There's lots of rocks. But my wife and I and son, for one of our first family trips together, we Airbnb'd this cottage in this little town right on the ocean. And it was just a lovely time. The town itself, farmers markets and all these artisan shops, and it was just a lovely 3 or 4 days spent by the ocean. The beach itself, not really swimming beach, so it got docked some points for that. What is your
that's fair.
I guess you can ask me questions.
if you can't go swimming at the beach, it does lose quite a few points. And I mean, that being said, my number one beach, I didn't actually go swimming yet, so maybe I'm just making stuff up.
What is your number one beach, Alan?
Number one.
My number one beach is, I'm definitely going to nail this pronunciation, by the way, Spiaggia di Ponente, which
That's not in Hawaii.
No, it is on the island of Sicily.
Oh, I could see how that could be pretty.
Yeah, and it is, again, this is one where this is a beach on Sicily, but I don't know if it's the beach.
Well, it's all Sicily is beautiful.
So. Yes. But from this beach, the one that I am not necessarily with this name, but the one that I'm thinking of, behind you, you can see up a like very large hill, up what is another one I'm going to nail the pronunciation, Castiglione di Sicilia, which is a town, or it's smaller than a town, it's like a hamlet or something, that's like built into the side of the hill, and like as you go up the hill,
see,
there's
this
more
is why
more.
I want to go to Greece and Italy and stuff. This sounds so cool.
Yeah, there's more and more houses. So not only like looking out into the ocean, which I actually think is, it's the Caspian Sea, I think is what it is.
That you're looking
at. Yeah, fancy. Sounds like it's from Narnia. Even if you look not at the water, it's, you're looking up at this amazing village. And then the days that I was there, you could look to, if you're facing the water and you look to the right far enough, you can actually see Mount Etna, I think is what it's called, which is a volcano on the island. And at night when I was there, you could see lava dripping down the out of the mouth of the volcano. So yeah, it was just every direction you looked, it was absolutely stunning.
Well, my number one, Alan, I don't know. I wouldn't say it's the most beautiful beach. I would say it may have my favorite beach memory that we've ever had on it. But I don't actually know if this is the beach that we're talking about. So I think it is. So we were in St. Martin, and there's this famous...
Oh, St. Martin!
This famous beach called Maho Beach, which is right by the airport. And the planes come and look like they're going to hit you. Like, that's how close they come to the beach. I seem to remember we went to that beach, but yet we went at a time where no planes were landing. Is that...
Yes.
Is that what your memory was? Like, I feel like we were...
We definitely went to this beach, but I do not remember any... I remember there might have been planes, like smaller planes taking off, but yeah. There was no like huge...
The big 747. Yeah. So I remember being disappointed at that. But it was still very beautiful. It's like in this little cove. But I just remember it being so funny. I think we may have told this story before on the podcast. But we show up. We took the taxi to get here. We show up. We're all excited to see 747s come within inches of our heads. We get told, no, that you have to wait. The next one's in 6 hours.
And yes.
It's like, okay, that's not going to happen. And then, but there's this beautiful beach. But everyone is like...
There was a lot of people.
Yeah. They're all on like the top 15% of the beach. The bottom 85% of the beach, no one is there. So we love the beach. We're like, why don't we get close to the beach? Like, this is awesome. Like, we should do this. And so we're there. It's you, me, our brother three, our dad, and our mom. And our mom starts walking, and she's carrying a couple things, and a wave comes in. And we're used to a wave just being like a little bit, maybe a bit of undertow, but nothing much. This just takes her out. Like, she
pulled her legs right out from under her.
She was like out to sea. And it was funny because we had already set up all of our stuff. We were all like set up good to go. And no one told us like, hey, you're going to get dummied by some waves here. She was just maybe 3 feet closer to the water than we were. And she got taken out. Her blanket went in the water. I think she had your cell phone.
She dropped my cell phone. It did not survive that.
I can picture it. It was like 7 years ago, and I can picture it like it was yesterday. But yeah, that's my number one, because I can't think about that beach without getting good feelings. We're just about to dock here, but before we do, we want to remind you, tell your friends, tell your families, heck, tell your enemies. We want to grow this Random Ship crew. Check us out on Instagram at randomshipthepodcast, or hit us up on email at randomshipthepodcast@gmail.com. Alan, let's close it out in style. What is this week's ship fact?
Well, sticking with the kind of non-traditional kind of ship we went with last week, this week's ship fact is... The ship of the state is a metaphor most famously used by Plato that compares the governing of a state to a ship. The masses own the ship, the sailors are politicians, and the navigator is philosophers, which I don't really know if we have anymore.
Drake.
I guess. But the way the metaphor goes, basically, I'm not getting into tons of detail, is the sailors fight to impress the owner of the ship.
Who's the owner again?
The masses, the public, the populace. They fight to impress so that they can become captains, so that they can lead the ship, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though they actually have no idea how to navigate. But because the sailors are fighting to impress the owner, everybody forgets about the navigator, who's the only person who actually knows how to get where we're going.
The philosopher.
The philosopher. So, I mean, and Plato was a philosopher, so this might be him kind of being
Yeah,
like,
he's kind of being like, I'm very important.
Yeah, I just thought that was another interesting little...
I mean, you could say podcasters are the new philosophers, so we are the navigators of society.
Oh.
Where do you want us to take you, society?
Yeah. Where do you want us to take you aboard this random ship?
Rawr.
That we call the world.
And on that note, thank you all so very much for joining us.
And have a great week, everybody. Man, I've almost killed you quite a few times.